You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
This week, the end of, what is it? The end of election week, which I think has stressed us all out to our extremes, listening to, one, the pundits, listening to the media, listening to each other. The stress that this has caused on society has been amazing. And does it just seem like every election keeps getting more and more stressful?
Yeah, it depends how you view. I was working.
So I was busy.
I was busy.
Well, I think part of it has to do with news became for profit. They really needed to get listenership and viewership. And so the more you could emotionally manipulate the public to watch your show, by taking a emotional stance or an emotional stance to drive people to say, I want to watch what you have to show. If you were unbiased, really unbiased in the news and not promoting some emotional piece of it, you know, some connection that affects the human person emotionally, how do you get people to say, tune in to 11 to watch our news? You have to have like a hook. You know, a marketing hook, a call to action. So in advertising, they have something where you want to get somebody's attention. You want to keep their interest. You want to build desire and then at the end have action, which is a call to action. It's the AIDA principle. It's like AIDA, attention, interest, desire, action. And you've heard news, action news, right? So we want people to be watching the news. What does this have to do with it all? Well, it has to do with that in order to get people to do something, you need to create some kind of desire. And that desire is usually emotional. And that emotional desire is at the root trying to utilize the human psyche, our innate emotions, to drive us to do something. Whether it's marketing some kind of perfume, to get us to buy a perfume or a cologne, shave our face nicely, to be attractive to our spouse, or if we're single, to attract somebody that we're interested in, right? We use marketing. Marketing sells things to promote self-esteem, to promote self-promotion.
Yeah.
For what? For sex, for relationship, for prestige.
That's the political part.
This is. Because politics has to utilize those same things that marketing uses. They will threaten your survival. They will push your own self-interests in order to get you to follow their candidate. You may think, I'm thinking logically, I'm thinking what's best for everybody. But what it really comes down to is even when you're thinking of what's best for everybody, you're thinking of survival, right? So this is the name of our show, which is called Survival Politics, Threatening Our Existence for the Future of the World. So in this little cartoon that we have here, politician is saying, I like apples. And because of that, one of the reporters is saying, anti-doctor, because, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So the message that the politician's really delivering is not that they like apples, but they're anti-doctor. Or the other one, oh, this guy must hate meat if he's pro-apple.
It's interpretation.
Interpretation. Mm-hmm. But why the interpretation? Because, I really know what they mean to say, and they're like an investigative journalist. Or if they use this approach, they can get somebody to watch their show on why this politician hates meat by saying, I love apples.
Yeah, it's marketing promotion.
Because if it just said, oh, the politician said, I like apples, and then the reporter said, he said or she said, they like apples, there's no, it's just reporting the news. Yeah. What's the news? Just the facts, man. Or just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah.
Do people want to know just the facts? Or do they want to know something that's juicy? Do they want a juicy apple? Or do they want a steak that's sizzling? That has this aroma of freshly barbecued or grilled with a nice barbecue sauce on top, or maybe some mushrooms sauteed in butter. They don't just want a hamburger,
yeah, right? It's seduction.
It's seducing. Seduction by threat. Seduction by sex. Seduction by end of the world, right? It's if we don't do that, we don't get people motivated to move, to vote for us, or to watch your show. Mm-hmm. And whether this is social media, the influencer, who has to be outspoken, because if they're boring, no one will watch. If they are even in the road, if they try to be even-handed, no one cares.
Yeah.
You know? I think we've talked about this too, is that sometimes influencers, you know, people who post on Instagram, will hire people to be really negative and to actually start arguments on their feed.
To do traffic in the algorithm.
Yeah. You got to pay the toll if you hire a troll. That's what they say. Sounds like Beretta, for any of you who remember Beretta. You remember Beretta? You don't remember Beretta. Let's continue on with this. All right, so this is the theme of today's show. Survival politics, how threats shape our beliefs and reactions. That the misinformation from media, social media, trolls, and politicians, this biased narrative, algorithms that only put in front of us certain things and in front of someone else other things, manipulative tactics will heighten our perceived threats, fueling emotional reactivity and survival instincts. This is a psychological theory. Exploitation of emotional and cognitive biases that politicians and media will want to exploit the emotional and cognitive biases of humans. Fear-driven messaging exploits biases, entrenching polarized beliefs, in-group loyalty, and deepening divisions. Psychological breakdown in irrationality results. So all this misinformation, the escalating misinformation, triggers anxiety, distrust, irrational behaviors, eroding social cohesion and individual mental health. I think we've never seen more people post more social media more often than over the last number of years. And the more that's posted, the more extreme views we get on all sides, but it also causes this thing called like in-group bias, that you want to be part of a group and you feel this affinity to the group.
So you have to feel belong to something,
right?
So you create a group and then somebody talking send me, so I belong with this group.
And you don't want to be in a group of engineers, but they're just all logical. So you want to be in a group of
rock stars. It's not logical like you.
What are you talking about? In any case, what we're talking about is how all these things, it's like the perfect storm, the perfect storm where the boat is hit by this 100-foot wave that's created by all these other things that are going on at once. It's almost like we're in that environment now. We have politics that have pushed the extremes in rhetoric. We have media that needs to exploit emotions in order to get viewership. We have social media people who, the more dramatic they can be, the more crazy they can be, the more outlandish they can be, the more viewers they get. Maybe we should do that. What do you think?
What?
Be more outlandish, more crazy.
We are doing
this. Oh, we're
show.
Trying. This is the show.
So the show. This is the show.
We're reacting.
Show, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ah! The point being is that we're pushing society to act and react more intensely based upon what may be a lot of misinformation. And it may be that people are thinking they're telling the truth, or they're telling the truth from their point of view. But by definition, your point of view is a point. It's not the whole spectrum of view. If you could understand everything all at once, which none of us can, your viewpoint would be completely different. How can two people have completely opposing views of something and both of them think that they're correct?
That is normal in all society, by the way.
It is normal. So let's look at our introduction here. Political beliefs influence individual identities and social norms. Again, misinformation elicits emotional and cognitive biases. Evolutionary roots shape belief persistence and reactions. So we wanted to look at, is there an evolutionary explanation as to why we want to fit into these groups, whether they're political groups or social groups or religious groups, family groups, friend groups, social media groups?
Mm-hmm.
Is there an evolutionary reason? And there is, and we'll go into that in a second here. That once we start choosing a certain viewpoint, a certain frame of reference in how we see the world, we then build upon that bias. So more bias builds upon pre-existing bias. We only see things in certain ways, and we just don't understand somebody who has a different viewpoint because their biases are so developed and our own biases are so developed that we can't walk a mile in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to take our shoes off, and our shoes are oh so comfortable. You know, these shoes that I'm in, I'm comfortable with myself. I'm correct. That's right.
And right.
I'm right. That's how we all are. Genetic predispositions. So let's go back to then in evolution. Genetic predispositions and environmental factors shape political leanings. Do you know that our brain may make us conservative or liberal? It may give us certain predispositions. Group cohesion strategies historically determine survival. So if we can get into a group that believes like us, it can help with survival. So now we've got how we were born, evolutionary, how we coexist with others that have our same affinities, and the cultural context and history of where we are will mold the ideologies of the individuals in that group and the group. Mm-hmm. That a small group survival will be based upon how like-minded that group is, even if they're crazily unlike another group, even if they're very different than another group. Two groups may not get along with each other and may not be able to coexist, but the individual group is stronger because of what may be perceived as their irrational beliefs.
Mm.
Their beliefs, their political leanings, and whatever, they can be stronger as a group because they do not have the same group beliefs as a different group. Each group can be strong, even though they may not together be strong.
Yeah.
And we may think too much that we all should be able to get along and think the same. And where that is a very educated, intelligent, maybe even emotionally intelligent way of thinking, that we should all get along, sometimes it's very difficult because we don't have all the same beliefs, the same upbringings, the same cultural backgrounds. And we have to reach out and understand rather than try to get someone else to understand who we are. Maybe we need to understand who they are. Do you agree?
Yes.
You must agree. You must agree with me.
You are right.
What else do we have here? Here we go. So, for instance, evolutionary psychological impacts. Group loyalty evolved to enhance cohesion. So, be loyal to the group. By having enhanced cohesion, the group has a higher chance of surviving. Conservatism emphasizes stability and order for protection. Whereas progressivism encourages exploration and adaptability. Both in the context of survival are very important. A group that wants to maintain stability in order for things to stay the same, have little change, and have conservative ideals, that may be good for a point in time. However, adaptability, exploration may also be best at another point in time for survival of the species. So if you look at that, being conservative or progressive are both survival mechanisms depending upon the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the history of conservatism and progressivism can be linked to evolution. And both are really important. We should actually be excited to have these differences in opinions.
That's balance.
Yeah.
It's create balance in the society. And it's good.
So I always looked at that, if you look at, let's just say, Democrat, Republican, and let's forget that for a minute, but let's say progressive or liberal and conservative. And you say these are two posts that are sticking out of the ground. And between those two posts is a hammock. In the hammock, it's where we are. And we need these two pulling tensions to support all of us in the middle. And sometimes we need to be a little bit more progressive. We need to be a little bit more understanding and be able to make change in order to do what's best for that group in the hammock. And sometimes we need to be conservative and we need to be, unchanging in order to do what's best for the group that's in the hammock. But it doesn't mean one. If you took one of those posts away, the hammock falls.
Yeah.
If everyone knows what a hammock is, I hope. Pretty cool thing to hang out in, the hammock. Let's see what else we have here. If I can get the right thing going here. That natural chemical responses are part of what it is to be a conservative and or be progressive. Conservatives have heightened amygdala activity for threat detection. So their amygdalas, when they feel a threat, are more reactive. Whereas liberals show increased activity in empathy-related areas. This is actually psychologically true, that the brain activity is different in conservatives and liberals. Neurobiology influences policy preferences. So our own personal biologies can influence our affinity to being progressive, liberal, conservative, or whatever we are, somewhere in between. There's this whole spectrum of political affinity. Doesn't mean anyone's right or wrong. For a given situation, it can be that if you have the choice of all this, you can find what is the best one. And it may not be your view, it may be the other view. It may be your view, but it's just as likely to be someone else's view.
But you're saying, is this black and white?
No, it's all gray. It's just this whole thing of gray is that depending on the situation, what is the best way of dealing with it? And the best way of dealing with it may be today versus tomorrow. It may be the north part of the state versus the south part. That there's so many things that are variable that we can't look at like this is the best solution for everything.
Okay, but I just say the brain for one is different than the brain for others.
Right. For that person, they may think this is the way to do it. But that's why diversity in thought is important. It brings strength with it. It gives us choices in how we act.
Okay. Right? You can be both in one moment?
Yes. No. Yes. No. I think you can be both. You can, I guess that's one of the things, is that if you actually take time to study, learn, and understand the different policies, the different ways that people act, and if you can truly look at something from all standpoints, then I think you can be. But I think we have predispositions, we have our own biases, and we may not have the time, the energy, the capacity to spend that much time researching. So we, instead of thinking, we react.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about survival politics. So I want to look at the next slide or the next concept here, which is that we are manipulated into camps. So we may have predispositions, we may have evolutionary biology, we may have all these things, we may have our culture and our upbringing, but we can still be manipulated into joining a group with emotional appeals, which will exploit our cognitive biases to polarize, that we need to be polarized in order to get anything done, and we'll explain that in a minute. Groupthink suppresses dissent. So if you're in a group, and there's studies about this too, that you, and let's go into a study in a minute here. Media reinforces ideological divides through targeted framing. So they'll frame things, they'll target, they'll actually divide people. One is they want to have people watch their show, which have a certain expectation and bias each week or each day because they agree with the media. That if one day the media says this and the next day they have a different opinion and it's taking a different side, somebody may like, I don't want to watch that. I want to feel good about, I want my own beliefs to be reinforced. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to groupthink. There's a study that was done, and I'm going to paraphrase it. It's not going to be exactly this, but it had to do with, they take a classroom, they take maybe 6 students and a teacher. They have a student go up to the board and they ask the first student, they say, hey, what is 2 + 2? And they'll say 2 + 2, and they'll say equals 5.
Of course.
Right? And then the second student will go up and do the problem, 2 + 2 = 5. And they'll do that third. And so all these students, except for one, is part of the setting where they're setting up this last student, the 6th student, to come up. And they see that everyone else has said 2 + 2 = 5. And it's similar to this. I think there's another one, which line is longer, which shape is biggest. But the idea is that everyone in the group has agreed to something that's irrational. And then the 6th student, the one who is actually the one they're doing the test on, looks at it and they decide that 2 + 2 also = 5. Or the line that's the smallest that everyone else said was the biggest, that's the biggest line. That once you get group dynamics going, some people feel it's more important to be part of the group than it is to really believe what the group is saying. But over time, because the group attachment is so strong, they start to believe in the rhetoric.
Yeah.
So those are real studies that are out there. And this is true. We talk about this true in small, simple things like this math thing. But this is true in, you know, if you want to talk about politics, you want to talk about religion, you want to talk about just generally what your friends feel about the football team in your area, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That if you want to hang out with your friends and talk about the Eagles playing football, and they all are Eagles fans and you're not, guess what? You'll be an Eagles fan pretty soon if you want to stay in the group.
Now the burger is pretty good. Yes, an Eagle.
An Eagle. Go Eagles. Who are they? Great, great baseball team.
Yeah.
Love all their music. Love their music. So going back to being genetically wired, genetic, wired, and learned influences, are they genetic? Are they wired? Are they learned? Genetics interact with life experiences to mold beliefs. So even though we may have some predispositions based upon our chemistries, our brain, and all that, that the life experiences we have can mold those beliefs. Cultural norms shape responses to societal issues. So we can see in our culture, in our social network, what the reaction is of our friends. And we may conform to what they are doing. And then nature and nurture interplay in belief development. So we may, again, have a certain structure that tends for us to think a certain way. And depending on how we're raised and who we're raised with and our friends and our culture, our environment and what has happened, we may change that kind of stuff. I was going to go into this, and here it is. Next slide. Trauma and our belief transformation. We can change our beliefs over time, and sometimes with trauma, it can reinforce or shift ideologies immediately. Coping mechanisms to some high stress can change our beliefs. So if we have some kind of political response to stress based upon a coping mechanism. And then life-altering events reshape identity and beliefs. And I've seen people switch parties. Like they'll be a lifelong Democrat or a lifelong Republican or an independent or something. And something happens in their life and their eyes are opened, or, you know what, I was this way until, and then all of a sudden they become the opposite political party. And once they do that, there's a lot of their views change. It's not just one.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a flipping of a coin. You can't be both heads and tails. You may be strongly tails or strongly heads, but you're not like, I'm a little bit of both.
So it's not.
So it's enough?
My original question.
Say that one more time, then. Can you be a little bit of both? Well, in this case, that if you're really staunchly part of a party, you can change your beliefs, and they can, you know, like all change. Once one can trigger the change of others. That something like this. And I'm not going to talk about who it is, but a woman who's a politician, she went to war, and she saw how much the industrial military complex was profiting because of war, and she spoke against the war and was attacked by her own party for doing so because she wasn't allowed to have her own view, and when that happened, she decided that's it, and she changed her party affiliation, which means she starts in a new group where she starts taking on maybe some of their traits. She starts listening more, and part of it may just be listening more to what the others have to say about the same things you're looking at and go, oh, I never thought of it that way. So maybe it is that we are fluid politically in a way once we hear, you know what they say is, until you walk a mile in the other person's shoes.
But I guess more is when the people believe they are part of one party or one group and start to have commitment. So the commitment maybe is more powerful for the logical for something happen.
Commitment to the group, yeah.
Yeah. So you see something, but you are part of the group. It's like the group of medical, you know, it has some mistake and
they cover it up.
And they cover up because I be part of this. So it's this human also behavior.
More important to be part of the group for the group survival. Group survival more important than being right.
Yeah. Not right, but yeah, that their own view.
Oh, okay. So your own view takes second to getting along.
Yeah.
You know. I don't agree, but I'm gonna go along. We're gonna go in the car and go with everyone, even though I don't agree, because I want to be part of the group. Wow. So political ideologies are linked to basic survival instincts. Maslow's hierarchy shapes ideological focus on security versus self-actualization, and this is the interesting thing. I looked at this because I thought that maybe there's a difference between those who are at the lower end of Maslow's scale compared to the higher end, and that if you're in the view of survival, that you look at policies that aid in your survival. And that might be one set of political beliefs that fit with that. But if you're higher along the scale of Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, and you're into the self-actualization phase, you may look at policies that allow you to self-actualize the way you think you need to self-actualize, and you can progress and transform your views based upon that. So a lot of politics based upon your individual preferences, not what is right for everyone, but I think we're all kind of selfish. What's right for us based upon our own needs.
Mm-hmm.
Think that's right?
Yeah.
Makes sense. And then also last one, which we didn't talk about, but socioeconomic status impacts policy preference. If I'm in a tax bracket that this is going to affect me, if where I live is impacted, you know, not in my backyard, you've heard about those. Like, I'm for nuclear power, but they're going to build one right back here. No, I'm not for nuclear power. So...
yeah, but you're on convenience.
There's all these, yes, convenience, right? So we are for things that may make sense until maybe they impact us in a way we don't want them to impact us. So even though they might be better for all of society, we have error, and I'll go through some of these quickly now. Errors in thinking, false consensus, we assume others share our beliefs, which is not true. This may create a barrier to empathy and understanding when we believe that there's false agreement with what we're thinking, that we stop listening and understanding other people when they don't actually agree with us, and we can deepen our polarization through selective perception, where we think everyone should be thinking like us, then we perceive things one way, and it deepens the divide with someone else who doesn't think the way that we think. And I think this got something that I'm going to move on from this one. There was another one we talked about, correctness, where we believe we're correct. It almost is very similar to that. But this is one, cognitive dissonance. When we have mental discomfort, which arises from conflicting beliefs. So it often is resolved by rejecting challenging ideas. And it also limits the tolerance for complex views. So if something disagrees with how we feel other things are, we may just reject it. That it's not even possible, not even plausible as being...
negotiate.
Yeah, I'm not even going to talk to you about it. No compromise. Hmm. You're not going to listen to me. I'm not going to listen to you. That's it. So when something makes us feel bad, we may not even... consider it, we may just ignore it in order for us to feel good. That media, we'll talk about media, random influences on beliefs, media exposure shapes perceptives unpredictably. Social circles impact political orientation. Random life events can change beliefs. The point is that sometimes when we think or somebody thinks by exposing us to some news item is going to make us think one way,
mm-hmm.
It may do the opposite. We've seen where the media will maybe attack a politician, male, female, whatever, and then instead of them getting a reaction where people go, ah, yes, they're bad, like because they did something bad,
mm-hmm.
They'll get more defensive and more protective because you're attacking my candidate. You're attacking my party, so I'm going to get more strongly supportive of my group. Right? So it's like the football team that the other team or the media is attacking your quarterback and for being a bad quarterback, and you like the quarterback, and then you become a stronger fan of that team because others are attacking your team. And then you talk amongst your group about how unfair that attack was, rather than considering it to be true. That's all I'll say for that. Need for association. Social identity theory drives group membership. Belonging to a group reinforces shared norms and ideologies. And political affiliation fulfills social needs. And this may be a recurring thing, is that maybe it's every 4 years, every 2 years, that maybe our political affiliation does really nothing for us, but then every couple of years when there's a big election coming up, we have to get into a camp, and then we have an affiliation, and we socialize with, quote, like-minded people. Mm-hmm. And then we can't believe that other party, because how could they be so silly to believe that? And they're saying the same thing to their friends. How are they so silly that they believe that? What can I say? And then it turns out to be all Russian trolls that are controlling all the narrative.
Now, the point is sometimes people destroy relationship, family relationship, friend relationship, with something that you don't have control.
True.
So why you cannot change the planet. So why you destroy your relationship with people because have different views? So that's my point.
And I guess the other piece is something that is almost just such a little theme, or such a little, like that something that affects very few people is made the biggest point. And I'll just say that, I'm going to say for instance thing here. So in the United States, we have an aging population. There's actually a big gap of the population missing from the United States. There's this whole group that's getting close to retirement age, and then there's a little bubble later. But there's not this big population following these older, from an age standpoint. So having immigration to kind of fill in the population where we're missing would be good in order to support those people that are moving close to retirement age. So if you really think about immigration in a way of how do we make the survival of the nation, you might think of it differently than just we can't have it or we need as much as possible, but there should be some good compromise. And I'll just leave it as that all these things, when they're broken down into the simplest terms, can be horrible arguments and emotionally driven arguments without actually researching and thinking about the problem. And when we do that, we're just, you know, the parties are trying to emotionally manipulate people, because a logical discussion of what's in the middle and what's best for the country on the whole, for the long-term survival of the country, is boring. Because it's boring, we don't have the time to discuss it. Since we don't have the time to discuss it and no one's going to be moved emotionally, it's not part of the solution.
Yeah.
We'll be back after this break with more boring conversation on politics.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the most exciting subject ever in the history of our shows, called survival politics. But we wanted to take a psychological and evolutionary approach to politics and look how it's actually linked to our emotions, our psyche, to fear, anxiety, things that get us moving. So the next thing is what happens when you form a group affinity. You may start defending the indefensible. For instance, in-group favoritism leads to defending unethical actions, because whoever that is doing the unethical actions is in your group, and now the other group is attacking more so because it's an external or out-of-group person, and because you know the other group is attacking your person, even though you might disagree with what your person did, is that you are more against the other group than you are against your own people. So you support your person even though they did something unethical. You can justify actions through moral disengagement. You actually disengage with your own morality because you need to justify.
You wanna be part of the group.
Yeah, loyalty, party loyalty, suppresses critical reflection. What else do we have here? Fallacy of uniform thinking. We talked about that before, where we sometimes believe everyone should think the same way, and when someone doesn't think our way, we think, ah, there's something wrong with them, rather than we think different from they do, from how they think, and so maybe there's something wrong with us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to think that. Limit cross-cultural empathy and understanding. So we don't tend to think about that other culture, that other person, that other group, and why they think the way they think. We just think that they should be thinking like we do. I wanted to bring up something sometime. This is something I always thought about. Is the assumption of peace, that we believe everyone wants to be peaceful. And even though the general population of most countries probably want to be peaceful, there are leaders within those countries who the goal is for that country to survive. They need to control their populations, and they have to be aggressive. Excuse me. What else do we have here? Let's move on from there. Here we go. Language, symbolism, religion, truth and justice in religion. That religious doctrines define moral truths. They influence political and social governance and guide actions on social justice issues. So the religion of people impact how they view their political opinions,
mm-hmm.
where they fall. Social proof and indoctrination. Media influences beliefs through selective narratives, depending on the type of media and what they're saying, what's their goal. Personalized algorithms reinforce existing perspectives, and social proof drives group conformity. Let's go back to personalized algorithms. Once you start down the, what is it called, the rabbit hole of YouTube, of Instagram, of whatever, based upon what you look at, you start being fed things that are similar, like, oh, if you were interested in this, then you would be interested in this.
Yeah.
And then you start getting all this media that has the same point.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, look at all this various media that agrees with me. But someone else is getting an extremely different feed that reinforces their own beliefs. So algorithms are actually creating further division by not providing an equal platform for different viewpoints.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Educational influence. So from early on in our lives, our teachers, our schools, what their focus is, who they are, will influence us as a society. And then some of the patriotic rituals foster social cohesion. So I remember as a child learning the Pledge of Allegiance, learning songs about America the Beautiful, that you learn certain things that create a cohesiveness to society.
Yeah.
And some of these things that people say, oh, we needed individualism, so we can't have those things. And it's like, well, you have to decide, is it good to have a certain amount of cohesion? And what should that be around? And that's when we start getting into arguments, because we all have differences of opinions of what we should teach our children.
Mm-hmm.
So don't teach them anything. Let them become 18 and let them decide what they want to learn. Up till 18, just let them play. Play in the backyard. What do you think?
No opinion.
Give them iPhones at the age of 3 and just let them, you know, go on the internet. Learn for themselves. No, that's what we actually do, in essence, with computers now, is computers have an open portal to, like, all information everywhere. So it's very good for learning, but at the same time, it's very bad when you start adding in social influence, algorithms, and feeds, which can move you towards very separate thought structures and groups.
Yeah.
Politicians need to have an emotional appeal, and that's what we talk about here, that emotional framing mobilizes support. If you don't emotionally frame something, you don't get any support. Politicians emphasize existential threats for unity. Us versus them rhetoric reinforces loyalty. I think I've never heard that more than this past election cycle between both groups. It wasn't one-sided. It was both were this, and that this is going to be the worst. If the outcome is this way, it's going to be terrible. If the outcome is this way, it's going to be terrible. It's like no matter what happened, it was going to be terrible.
Nothing happy.
No. So no happy medium. Finance and economy affects your political misinformation desperation. So you can become desperate because of misinformation. Misinformation fosters public anxiety and fear. It drives extreme reactions and social distrust. It undermines society's stability and mental health. I don't think I've ever seen as many emotional reactions to an election than I saw this year.
This year, yes, me too.
Again, we haven't had social media in the abundance that we've ever had like now. We haven't had individuals that have grown up in the social media society who have decided to post all of their emotional outbursts on social media, as well as know the amount of views they get is based upon how emotional they can be in media. So people do wild and crazy things in the media, whether that is wild and crazy in promoting fear and hatred, or wild and crazy in how they react to it. We've never seen that much. And then the media, again, really attacking each other and the politicians attacking each other.
It's spray the emotion for everybody.
By the way, I'm only talking about the U.S. I'm sure this doesn't happen in any other country.
When we have energy, maybe.
So, how about coping? Coping with misinformation. Emotional distress arises from conflicting narratives. Trust in institutions erodes. It erodes under misinformation. And we now have heightened public skepticism and irrationality based upon losing trust for everything. That, right, if somebody's not emotional, we don't listen to them. And meaning if somebody is just, hear the facts,
yeah.
Well, I want to tune to somebody who agrees with me, not hear the facts. And even misinformation has been defined as misinformation, meaning, oh, that's misinformation. Oh, it's misinformation that you're calling that misinformation. It's actually Mr. Information. Oh, terrible. So empathy bridges the gap between divergent beliefs. If we can start to listen to the other, listen to the ideological divides, and listen in order to open a dialogue, will help foster cross-cultural understandings. It will reduce polarization through mutual respect. We need to have mutual respect. We should listen. Tell me your views, not just what your views are, but tell me why you have them. Tell me how you got there. How are you brought up? Let me actually understand something about you so I can understand where your views come from. Because maybe I don't know as much as you about what you've lived in life.
Yeah.
Maybe I can learn. Rather than, here's what my beliefs are. I don't want to know your beliefs. Tell me who you are, how you got to where you are, and then maybe I'll understand your beliefs. How about that? Strategies for resilience. So the number one thing that we need to do in 2024 into 2025 is be resilient as a country, as a people, around the world. Media literacy counters misinformation's influence, meaning really start to stretch out and listen to many viewpoints. Critical thinking promotes information dialogue. Talk to others in an open and understanding way. Build resilient communities and strengthen civic trust by opening dialogue, not shutting it down.
Yeah.
And then finally, conclusion here is, political beliefs are shaped by complex influences and biases. Understanding origins fosters empathy and informed discourse. Combating misinformation requires targeted strategies. Now, we don't want to, what is it called, beat a dead horse on misinformation. Everyone talks about misinformation. What we like to think, or what I like to think, is that almost all information is misinformation because it's missing a lot of the information. It is only a little bit of it. The more information you can get, maybe we should look for more information rather than misinformation. That miss is missing information. I know it's supposed to be listened to as miss being not, like wrong information, but it's really potentially correct information, but only a tiny piece of it. And what I go back to is, if I can get back to this here, is this slide, where a politician will say, "I like apples," and then what misinformation would be is obviously anti-doctor or hates meat because they like apples. Is that misinformation may actually at its core have something that's true, which makes it believable. But when you get all of the information rather than a piece of information, maybe then you can have a logical discussion with empathy, reaching across the aisle.
Logic.
Reaching across the aisle. In any case, hope you had fun with us this week. This will probably be our only show on politics, but the point was to bring a psychological aspect to it. We hope we did that. Have yourself a great week. Enjoy.
See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.